It is a state capitol report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in with Democratic State Representative Deb Ondraka of Whitefish Bay, a district in Milwaukee's North Shore suburbs. And we get Ondraka's reflections on the recently concluded session in the Assembly and explore her legislative agenda with gun safety measures. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Representative Ondraka, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're advocating for a bill that would ban firearms on university grounds, and current law allows colleges to post notice on buildings to prevent people from entering with guns. Why ban firearms on grounds as well?
Well, we were approached by a group of UW-Madison professors after a number of high-profile shootings on college campuses. And it came to our attention that Wisconsin is really an outlier when it comes to allowing guns on college campuses. So our current law says that universities, public and private, may post building by building that you're not allowed to carry guns into a particular building, but they don't have the same protection that K through 12 schools do that say that this is a gun-free school zone. And in fact, our college campuses have less protection than most of our state buildings that don't allow guns into the buildings. They have less protection than our courthouses. And when you think about college campuses and young people away from home for the first time, I think most of us can agree that that's really not a good place to have firearms around where people can access them.
Why are college campuses more exposed in this area?
They're more exposed because of the way our concealed carry permit law was written back in 2011. So unless a building explicitly says that guns aren't allowed inside, the default is that they are allowed. We reached out and spoke with a number of campus safety offices and asked them about the current state of gun laws on campus. And many of them said it's confusing because if a building is posted no guns, you can't bring firearms into the building. However, if you live off campus, then there's nothing restricting your gun access there. If you're driving a car through campus, what happens then? So what we're trying to do is simply give and extend the same protections to our colleges and universities that our K-12 schools have.
You mentioned Act 35 back in 2011, making it legal for licensed individuals to be armed with a concealed weapon, and how this is potentially on college campuses brought some confusion. What effect has Act 35 had in Wisconsin over now like a dozen years?
Well, we have been living with concealed carry for a while, and I should say that I am a gun owner. I do have my concealed carry permit. So we're not talking about rolling back that law specifically. Mm-hmm. What we are talking about is making sure that when you have young people, and I have two kids who are in college, and when you think back to college days, you realize that it's an emotional time, kids are away from school, and you also have people who are 21 and some who aren't. The thing that we need to think about when we're talking about making campuses more safe from gun violence, too, is that in Wisconsin, 2/3 of our gun deaths are suicides. And so if there is an available firearm, you're not only endangering yourself should you find yourself at risk, but you're also endangering others if people have access to that firearm and it's not secured. Wisconsin does not have any laws requiring that guns are stored safely and away from people who are either underage or who may be at risk. So when you look at the whole picture in Wisconsin, it's really a volatile mix, which is why we introduced Assembly Bill 1080 so that we can streamline our gun laws and make sure that we're protecting our college campuses.
The bill would make it a Class A misdemeanor to carry firearms on campus grounds, and violators could face up to 9 months in jail and a $10,000 in fines. Why this level of severity?
It really just brings it in line with some of the other gun laws that we have in the state. We're not trying to go above and beyond with this particular bill. What we're trying to do is bring a little bit of uniformity. After talking with a number of campus safety officers and police, there is just such a patchwork. So we just think it's time that we make sure that our gun laws have consistency, not only from building to building, but campus to campus and school to school.
You've talked about wanting college campuses to become as secure as K-12 schools. Why do you think is the same level of security needed at colleges for adults and K-12 schools for kids?
Well, you're talking about firearms. You're talking about whether or not people can access them. And we just want to make sure that when you're either at school or when you're at college, when the professors came to us, they realized that with more people, with more guns in more places, there is a greater risk right now with people either coming into your classroom or coming out. And arguments today seem to escalate very quickly. And we want to make sure that if they do, that there are no firearms involved. So making sure that our college campuses are safe, like our K-12 schools are, just seems to make sense.
We're talking about a bill that would ban firearms on college campuses with Deb Andraka, bill author and Democratic state representative from Whitefish Bay. Colin, with a question, you can share your comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So why introduce the bill near the end of the legislative session for scheduled floor votes? What about the timing here?
The timing is about how much care we put into crafting this legislation. We know there's an awful lot of controversy out there whenever you introduce a new gun law. It tends to be politically polarizing. And so when we were approached by the group of professors, we went out and we met with campus safety officers and called campus safety officers in different parts of the state, because we realized that in urban areas with campuses, rural areas with campuses, suburban areas with campuses, there are different needs, there are different laws. And so we wanted to make sure that we were bringing all the stakeholders to the table and putting out a bill that wasn't just sort of a knee-jerk reaction to a problem. So we put a lot of thought into it. We made sure that we included law enforcement in the decisions, professors and students, and so that we could introduce something that was also in line with our existing gun laws and existing campus laws. So when we reached out to law enforcement, there was a 2017 poll, was one of the most recent ones we could find. 71% of respondents opposed allowing concealed weapons on university campuses. In 2021, there was a survey that said that support for carrying concealed weapons on campuses fell to only 27%. So we wanted to make sure we had something that was in line with public sentiment, made our law enforcement professionals' job easier, not more difficult, and was something that was consistent all across the state and that they could live with.
State Assembly leaders, as you know, are planning no additional floor votes for this session. Are you asking Governor Tony Evers to call a special session on the legislation?
Well, we've tried that. Back in, I think, 2018, we had a special session trying to get some other gun laws passed, just making sure that we have background checks on every gun sale and we have a red flag law. And the Republicans gaveled in and gaveled out that session. So I don't see the current legislature being able to take action on this bill. If the governor were to call a special session, we'd probably see the same results. However, as we all know, we have new legislative maps. And so hopefully in the next legislative session, we can take an idea like this and start to move it forward with people who are elected and are more responsive to the people who put them in office.
As you mentioned there, this month, Governor Evers signed into law new legislative voting maps. And we talked with John Johnson at Marquette University Law School about how these maps offer Democrats their first shot at majorities in years. But you voted against the maps. Can you tell us why?
Sure. Well, when the maps came over to us in the assembly, we had about 30 minutes to look at them. It was a very long bill. And I strongly believe that any bill needs a public hearing, and particularly when it comes to legislative voting maps. So there was a line in the bill when the assembly got it that we were unclear about, which was about special elections and the timing of when the maps would go into place. And we didn't have enough time to get satisfactory answers from the Legislative Reference Bureau and others. And so I voted no, not because I don't want new maps, because I certainly was very enthusiastic about getting some new, more fair maps. But that's just not the way I think government should be run. I mean, we should be able to hear from the public. We should make sure that we're holding hearings and being thoughtful. So I voted no because of the timing and just the fact that we had so little time to look through a complex bill. And if you go back and look at the bill, you can see it's a whole bunch of zip codes and everything else together. So why don't you make sure my vote was thoughtful? So my no vote was more about only having a very small amount of time to look at the proposal and a big question about a line that was added at the very, very end of the bill, not because I didn't like the maps, because I'm very excited that we're finally going to be getting fair maps in Wisconsin.
How do Democrats, your caucus, feel about these maps?
Well, we are very excited because we can finally run campaigns where we have competitive districts. And fair maps is not about making sure there's a majority in one party or another. So if we were guaranteed a Democratic majority, then it would just be another gerrymander. But we are very excited to run candidates in districts all across the state that could be the candidate could be elected from either party. So in 2020, I was one of the very few candidates, there's only three of us in a decade, that flipped a district from Republican to Democrat. And now we finally have a chance, and instead of having three seats in a decade, we have probably 20 seats across the state. That's exciting. We should have candidates that are being elected on their message, not their maps. And so for the first time, we might have a legislature that looks like the voting public. So that is an opportunity for lots of bills, like gun safety bills. We know that gun safety bills poll at 60, 70, 80% popularity, but we've never been able to get a public hearing because we've been so polarized. So if we can finally get a more balanced legislature, I'm very optimistic that next session we can have public hearings on bills like the campus firearm safety bill and finally start to make some progress to bring down the rate of gun violence in the state.
We discussed policy priorities with Democratic State Representative Deb Ondraka of Whitefish Bay. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective. 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Democratic State Representative Deb Ondraka of Whitefish Bay, a member of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. Be part of the discussion at any point. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Representative, as you sit on the legislature's Joint Finance Committee that oversees state spending, we saw on Friday Governor Tony Evers vetoing three bills in a $2 billion tax cut package, and Republicans had split the package into several bills in hopes they wouldn't all be vetoed. What are your thoughts on this tax cut package?
Well, the Republicans' tax cut package, when you took it in its entirety, would take our current state budget surplus into a deficit in just a few short years. And when we're looking at what we need, what our state's priorities are, what I hear from my constituents is that there are a lot of places that the state needs to invest after a decade of budgets that were designed to cover the bare minimum. I also sit in the education committee. Our public schools have been underfunded for more than a decade. We have infrastructure projects. We have lead pipes. There are our parks are vastly underfunded. We are 50 out of 50th in state spending on Wisconsin's state parks. So I am 100% for returning the surplus to taxpayers, but we also have to make sure that we are making investments in the parts of Wisconsin that make it great and that attract workers and young people to our state. And so we have a once in a lifetime opportunity to do that with the state surplus. We need to remember this is not a structural surplus. This is not money that is coming in to
over and over year over year. What we have is some leftover spending and some leftover money from the pandemic, and we're still living through that. So yes, we absolutely do want to return some of the surplus, but we also need to look at some of the areas of the state that have been neglected. And I don't want to vote for any proposal that would put us back into deficit spending in just a few years.
So it sounds as if you're saying there are myriad other issues that Wisconsin is grappling with that this surplus could help. And yet I also hear you say that you would support a tax cut package. How can you do both?
Well, you can do both by scaling down the tax cuts that the Republicans have proposed. I'm very much in favor of the tax cut that the Republicans proposed for childcare. Now, I would have preferred us to invest in childcare counts, which was a program that we heard from over and over again that childcare providers need in order to keep their centers open. Anyone who's tried to put an infant in childcare knows that it costs more than in-state tuition right now for infant care. And it's not sustainable. And at a time when we have a labor shortage, we really need to get as many people into the workforce as possible. And really, parents, they need this kind of help. So I would have liked to have seen the state invest in childcare counts. The Republicans proposed a more modest tax cut for childcare expenses. So, that is an area of compromise that I hope that we will see going forward. The other parts of the Republican tax cut package, a lot of that was skewed towards more wealthy folks in the state. And I would like to see that go toward people who are struggling a lot more. So we had questions. I think we will reach a compromise, and I think that going forward, we just need to be a little bit more balanced in what we're doing with the surplus. Yes, we can return some money to taxpayers, but we also need to make sure that we're not underfunding areas of the state like childcare and parks and education.
You mentioned the child tax credits. Governor Evers hasn't signed or vetoed that fourth bill from the package that would expand child tax credits. What are your hopes there for the future of that bill?
I do hope that the governor signs that. I think that is something that, like I said, it's not the program that we would have liked to have seen. We would have liked to have seen child care counts, as would most child care providers in the states and the families who depend on them. But I do think that is a compromise that should be reached with Republicans. So at least it's a step in the right direction. If we're going in that direction, perhaps next session we can, with a different legislature, we can make some more bold moves towards ensuring that our childcare industry is sustainable, and we can open some more centers and slots for families who are on long, long waiting lists and who need it. But in the meantime, that is something that I would like to see the governor sign into law.
We're talking about policy priorities with Deb Andraca, Democratic State Representative from Whitefish Bay. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts along the way at 800-642-1234. In January, the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau estimated the state's operating budget would have a surplus of $3.25 billion by the end of the current budget cycle. What do you think should lawmakers do with that money then?
Well, personally, I would like to see us invest in education. We are spending on public education in our public schools has not kept up with inflation. And for so long, we have seen our public schools doing more with less. A specific area would be special education. The state only reimbursed 33% of the special education costs for public schools, and they are required by law to provide a free and appropriate public education to every student, regardless of their disability. And that is something that we need to do, but it's something that we also need to fund. And we have not been doing that. And
So that's an area I would like to see us improve on. I have two kids in college, and I have seen our public schools over the years just, you know, struggling to keep up not only with inflation, but with the growing needs of today's students. We can't prepare students for the jobs of tomorrow when we are not funding them adequately. So I really want to see public education get the funding and the reliable, sustainable support that it deserves.
What are your priorities for the Joint Finance Committee this spring?
Well, we are coming to the end of the legislative session. Mm-hmm. And so we were not, the Senate, I think, is still going in. The Assembly is basically wrapping up its floor sessions. There'll be a couple more, a week or two. I think there's a week in March and a week in April where there's sort of cleanup business, but all of our bills passing are pretty much done. If we can't come to agreement on what to do with the surplus in this session, then we will come to a decision next session. And in the meantime, the surplus will grow in interest. And so it's not the worst problem in the world to have. We do need to return money to taxpayers. As far as what we do over the next couple of months, one thing I would like for us to make sure that we do is to take a look at what we're doing with the surplus and maybe just talk to each other over the next couple of months and making sure that we're getting along a little bit better.
You mean lawmakers talking with each other? How has communication been this session?
Not great. So this is only my second term in office. I was I was elected in 2020. Mm-hmm. And it is so rare to flip a district from Republican to Democratic. I can say that I was not exactly welcomed with open arms by some of my Republican colleagues. I would like to see more bipartisanship. I would like to see us be able to compromise a little bit more. And I would really, really like to see us come together on issues that have, very, very strong public support. Mm-hmm. Things like gun safety, things like Badger Care expansion, things like environmental quality and parks. It would be great for us to really be able to sit down and hammer out some more bold proposals that we can all agree on, and not just agree on as legislators, but that the public agrees on.
Representative Andraca, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Deb Andraca, Democratic State Representative in Whitefish Bay, on the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show.